We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
This is Meet the Movie Press. It is March the 29th, 2019. On the show this week, The Craft reboots, Us breaks records, Jolie to join the MCU, Dumbo and the Beach Bum, plus a couple of exclusives, and we got shit to give away! Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now... here's Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press.
And if that wasn't enough, we also have some exciting news about something that Guillermo del Toro is working on. Had a little chat with him yesterday, and that is going to be coming up on the show later. So if you know any entertainment journalists or film journalists watching the show, or if they're not, tell them they should be, because there's a story coming up. So welcome. This is Meet the Movie Press. It is March the 29th, 2019. My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. And with me, as usual, is Dimitri, and Kit is back. Dimitri, who are you and where can we find you, please?
Hey, you can find me here at Meet the Movie Press, Popcorn Talk Network, of course, Anatomy of a Movie, where later on today we'll be discussing Us, and on the Twitters at DMovies1701.
Kit?
And I'm editor for Screen Picks, and you can find me at The Movie Kit on Twitter, so hit me up.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And if you want
to
know where...
happy to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you back. Thank you. I appreciate
it.
You know
in a
you're
row.
Super busy. I know. Well, there'll be some men who'll be very outraged by that. Women and opinions.
I can tell you I am not.
No, absolutely. We welcome all voices on this show. Okay, guys, I want to also talk about something later on the show, something I saw a show last Sunday night here in LA. If you're a fan of 80s movies, I did a piece on this for Forbes. That is one of the places you can see my work. I will tell you about that later in the show. Talking of things and Memory Road, The Craft reboot's being conjured up by Blumhouse.
Blumhouse Corner!
And director Zoe Lister-Jones. Oh, woman and the horrors! Oh, woman! Obviously, this comes off the back of, coincidentally off the back of comments that Jason Blum made towards the end of last year about women and horror. And obviously, Blumhouse now has a woman helming a movie, a very popular movie. This was all kept very quiet until on the Instagram stories last week, Blumhouse, without any comment, posted the poster for the movie The Craft. And I was like, huh, okay, maybe they're a fan of the movies. And then within about 2 hours, the story had broken on the likes of Deadline and Variety that this is what they're doing. Okay, first of all, Kit, The Craft, do you like that movie? Or how do you feel about the reboot?
It's a real cult favorite of mine. Yeah. It's one of those ones that every time it's on, I end up watching it. I love Faruka Balk in that. That's right?
Faruza
Balk.
She's awesome in that.
Faruka
Salt. I mean, it's a bit cheesy. And clearly, and I've read this, it kind of cleared the way for all of these witch-type, you know, scenarios either on TV and film. You know what? I'm okay with this reboot, I guess, but they're going to have to really do something different with it because there's just so much already out there. And I think Zoe Lister-Jones is a good start.
They'll probably do an old women version. Oh, right.
You think?
I'm gonna do it again with old women.
I just like, you know, when she did this and she made her hair blonde.
Yeah.
And then
it's a great... I revisited The Craft just a couple of months ago. It randomly came up on one of the streaming services or something. And I saw it and I was like, I haven't actually watched that in probably about 10 years. It is slightly hokey.
Yes.
But it's aged surprisingly well. And I know a lot of my friends have sort of kids. They've got daughters who are sort of, you know, sort of late, sort of pre-teens into early teens. And they're now discovering the movie that to them is decades old.
Right.
And they're just automatically connecting with it. So I think this really has legs. And hopefully they'll ramp up some of the horror. Dimitri, your thoughts on this?
To me, The Craft is always it's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
I by no means think it's a really good movie. You know, it's titular. You know, it had a great cast at the time. I understood. For the time that it came out, it was perfect timing.
It was mid-90s.
Yeah, and I think that with Blumhouse taking the reins, I think we're going to get... I'm okay with it, that they're doing it. I mean, when I first heard about it, I was like, The Craft, really?
Yeah.
But, again, in Blumhouse, I trust a really good director. And you're right. I think if they bring something new to the table and not just a reboot, it could still be that campy fun, but horror and good. And you'll need a good cast, too.
Well, when The Craft came out, and I hope, again, they kind of went for people in the mix of that cast in the original that were already had some heritage and some that were quite new to the game. So that was a really nice mix. And I hope they do something similar here. But also, when that came out, The Craft, I think it was 96 that movie actually came out originally. There weren't a lot of
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Movies that were aimed at that audience that were horror, that certainly were really any quality. Because women, largely speaking in horror that time, were tits, teeth, and victims. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the three things that they were. It was like they took their top off, you saw them naked, and then they usually died. Or sometimes, like the Jamie Lee Curtises, they then triumph. But if you didn't have predominantly female casts, you might have one strong woman and everyone else was a victim. So it was really interesting to see that play out.
It was. And also, don't forget, that was like the Kevin Williamson
period Scream and stuff like that.
Of horror and of TV.
Yeah.
Right? So I understood the audience that it was going for. It
was the girl power period. I mean, obviously that's a Spice Girls thing, but it was very much about the empowerment of women. And we're seeing that wave again. Don't forget, if you are watching the show live on YouTube, you are more than welcome to take part in the chat. We always appreciate it. But please be nice, be civil, and have fun. Sure. We always appreciate that. This is a family.
Absolutely.
It's an environment we really appreciate. So a lot of people in there. BlackRock316 in there. Good morning, good morning. Zeno Hour, hello. Jack Dennis in there. Good morning, good morning. Filter Jamie the Craft did okay back in 96. It did.
It did.
I just remember it being for having Neve Campbell and Skeet Ulrich together before Scream. Yeah.
Yep.
I would catch The Craft. This is from BlackRock 316. I would watch The Craft whenever it comes on TV. Don't mind the studio rebooting it. No, I'm actually quite looking forward to this. And film nerd Jamie, the mean girl with her hair falling off, is pretty messed up, as I recall.
Yes.
Absolutely. That inspires my look. Jack Dennis, Neve Campbell as a teacher in the new movie? Do you know, going back to the point of actually... being okay with this rebooting it. I sometimes do have problems with studios rebooting movies, but because of Blumhouse and what they did with Halloween, I genuinely feel that they know what they're doing. There's a couple of other movies in the 90s that I would really like to see. Obviously, Blumhouse have expressed an interest in Scream. But I mean, again, that's about getting rights and stuff like that. But what I would love to see them do is The Faculty.
Faculty by Robert
Which
Rodriguez.
A lot of people forget about.
That's a great movie. It's a good movie.
It's a good movie that had a really strong young cast, directed by Robert Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Femke Janssen was also in this.
Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm. And Josh Hartnett, I'm correct. And it was a really cool, that was a really good movie. And they could redo that movie.
They could redo straight from the subject matter. They could redo it and it would fit in. I just think The Craft, they really need to think about how they want to do it.
Now, I just wanted to go back, too. So the Craft opened on May 3rd of 1996.
Okay.
$24.8 million.
So that's not too bad.
Yeah. It's okay.
I mean, if that was the opening weekend, if you convert that, that's around the 40
mark. The opening weekend was $6 million.
Six. Okay. Mm-hmm. So total box office was
total domestic gross was 25 million.
Okay. So that's about 40 something million, which back then was kind of fine.
Yeah.
But I think, again, while that was quite popular in movie theaters, I think it really has found a completely new life.
I agree.
On home entertainment. I mean, you know, and a lot of movies did in that day and age. Oh. You know? I mean, back in the day, well, this was all fields. Zeno Hour saying, at Simon Thompson, I would love to see Lana Condor and Zendaya cast in The Craft remake.
Really
good ideas. Zendaya would be great. Zendaya is Michi. And film nerd Jamie, The Faculty fulfilled the promise that Scream failed failed to do. Oh, controversial. Oh, the nerd saves the day. No, absolutely. MK Songbird, John Stewart is in the faculty. John Stewart is in the faculty.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget that John Stewart
was the science professor. He was the science teacher. Yeah.
He was in Death to Smoochie and a number of other movies as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's really interesting. I went to another scary movie event yesterday. This is where the Guillermo del Toro story is going to come in. Scary stories to tell in the dark. And someone who is a fan of the show, who shall remain nameless to protect their identity, actually saw this full movie this week. They accidentally found themselves in a test screening. Nothing to do with us, nothing to do with this show, so please don't be angry with us. Feedback was very, very positive. First word coming out of that, people genuinely, it genuinely is a scary thing. There was a luncheon yesterday in Hollywood, which I was very, very grateful to be invited to. So thank you for that. That's much appreciated. It was very nice. It was basically a lunch, and then we saw a scene from the movie that we hadn't seen in publicity stuff before, which was really genuinely, it was quite intense.
May I ask, when you say scene, did you, because it's an anthology, correct?
Well, I'm going to get to this in just
thank
a moment.
You. Okay.
Just, this is the benefit of the show. You learn things as we go along. So basically, it was a scene from the movie, and then Guillermo came out, and the Andre, the director, Andre Ovredal, came out as well and had a chat, and they brought out the cast of the movie. So it was great to hear from them. They took a couple of questions on the floor, and then they showed the trailer, which came out yesterday. But one of the things that that Guillermo actually was very keen to stress was the fact that a lot of people think this is an anthology along the lines of Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, this is not going to be that. Even though, obviously, it's based on a series of books. Mm-hmm. What they've done is this is one story encompassing a load of different characters, and it's one big thing that stuff happens in. It's not lots of separate movies.
So like a trick-or-treat.
Like a trick-or-treat. Well, even less than a trick-or-treat, because it's a movie. It's right. Not sort of different stories.
Okay.
It's kind of trick-or-treat-esque, but it's more of a full-body thing. It is not an anthology piece with things that are separate and not
like
connected.
Creepshow
and that kind of thing. So that was really interesting, and a lot of people were very surprised to hear that, because I think a lot of people have believed that it's an anthology thing. All the characters are friends or have a relationship, and they're all affected by this thing that is happening after they find this book.
I think it's the marketing that's almost selling it like an anthology.
It sounds like it. I mean, when you hear the title, you think,
That's why everybody was really surprised yesterday in the room that was the case.
I like it.
And also, he's gone very much for physical effects with this, and Andre, because Guillermo, that's his chosen medium. He's very much a strong believer. And I spoke to him about this, and there's going to be a piece up on Forbes hopefully next week on this. I'm super busy at the moment, but I'll try and get around to it. So it's very much about physical effects, which really, really looks great. It really looks good on screen. It's very, very effective. Some of the creepy effects, I won't describe too much about what we saw, but it involved body parts.
Nice.
And it's
the
genuinely
trailer, the trailer with the girl, the thing on her face, I'm like, oh no!
Shit. Well, I mean, I thought it was... I thought that was gross, and then I saw it on a big screen, and it's even grosser. I made the mistake
and
of
satisfying at the same time.
Well, yeah, but I made the mistake of one scene which involves someone eating something, and I thought that was a good time for me to have my sandwich. I didn't
good
finish the sandwich.
Nice.
Didn't finish the Sammy, so that got put down. But also, when I had a chat with Guillermo afterwards, and this is where the interesting stuff is really coming in, completely unconnected to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. He's got a collaboration relationship with Isla Lopez, who's a great writer and director, a great voice in horror, and they have been rumored to be working on something together. She actually gave him the script for that project last weekend.
Nice.
So he's seen the screenplay that she's been working on, gave it to her, he's read through it, he says it's really great, he absolutely loves it, and that project is a werewolf movie.
Nice. Good.
Now, obviously, we don't know if Guillermo is going to direct or Guillermo is going to produce. I'm assuming producing on this if Issa has written and is a director as well. Guillermo del Toro is working on a werewolf movie, which is possibly one of the greatest fucking things I have heard this year.
It needs to come back in a good way. There hasn't been a really good werewolf movie in a while. I know Benicio del Toro. It was The Wolfman,
which I didn't hate.
No, it's visually pretty on, you know, spot on.
And it's the Maze of Halloween Horror Nights for that was great.
Well. Oh my God, yeah. And so, yeah, I think Guillermo behind a werewolf movie. That's pretty awesome.
Now, I'm trying to remember. There was one, we were talking about The Craft and The Faculty. There was a werewolf kid, the
Teen Wolf.
Yeah, no, not Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf 2. Teen Wolf again.
I can't remember what
Pre-teen
it was.
Pre-Teen Wolf.
Sperm Wolf. Skinwalkers.
Somebody might remember
Zygote
it.
Zygote Wolf.
Christina Ricci was in it.
Oh. I know the... Yeah, oh, yeah, cursed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cursed.
Yeah. Or as I call it, shit.
I didn't like it.
Was, no, I did not like it.
Okay, well, that was a werewolf movie.
Yeah, there was a space of these werewolf movies probably about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And obviously we're seeing the rebirth of the Universal Monsters. Yes. We know that Lee Whannell is working on this. And though obviously last year at Halloween Horror Nights, there was a Universal Monsters maze.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, oh my God, monsters are so in right now. Those monsters, they're so on fleek. Oh my God! Seriously, guys, monsters are so in right now. I'm going to start a blog about
monsters.
It. I'm going to be like a lifestyle monsters guy now.
Because it's like, it'd be totally cool to be like a werewolf.
Oh, my God, he's so hairy.
So
your parents
cool.
going to have to cheat to get you into school?
Oh, my God, that's so mean. Oh, my God. Yeah, but no, seriously, these are coming back, werewolf movies.
They are. Like, well, I think monster movies are coming back. We're seeing a great renaissance of horror because some people have been written like, oh, Us has brought horror back. And it's like, really?
Oh my God, if really? I read another of those shit hot takes.
I know. And I'm like, really? Because it hasn't really left.
Yeah.
It's been on this great wave.
It really has.
And we're in a great period, I think, because we're seeing great reboots. Mm. Like they've been smart. We've been seeing smart horror movies, fun horror movies, and terrifying, thought provoking.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a whole, like, this genre is exploding in really positive ways. So,
no. People in the chat talking about this. Straight Edge Vegan Bell. Hey, Straight Edge Vegan Bell. Hello, everybody. Great panel again today. Oh, appreciate that. Thank you so much. Senor Nerd, I read Scary Stories as a super young kid, and they were incredible books. Absolutely. They didn't really become big in the UK, but I did read them, and I genuinely really love them. Jack Dennis screamed. TV series still has a rebooted season 3 coming. That season is in worse shape than the New Mutants. Oh, don't get me started on those New Mutants. Senor Nerd, I swear to God, I think New Mutants is going to be axed as a big screen release, and I think they're just going to put that out on Disney Plus. Senor Nerd, would it be Wolfman for Universal? Question mark, exclamation mark, question mark, Senor Nerd. That's not a bad shout, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that is something, it sounds like this is something that Guillermo is going to be developing with Issa Lopez independently.
Okay.
And obviously we know he has a relationship with Netflix. He's working on things with them. And there's a number of other projects that he's have been just dating for him for quite a while. But maybe that could be something. Film Nerd Jamie, Toy Soldiers. Dog Soldiers? Question mark. Dog Soldiers. Another great one. Another great werewolf movie. Xeno Hour? Lol. Film Nerd Jamie, happy for us is success, but saying it brought back original films is nonsense. Absolutely. No,
yeah.
Also, you know, this whole thing that you were mentioning, Dimitri, about these hot takes on how Us has led this horror revival, horror's back. Horror has never gone away.
No.
It has been poo-pooed by the industry and element, but there is a... Do not underestimate the loyalty of the self-confessed horror fans. And those people who don't call themselves horror fans, but fucking love a horror movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like anything in this business, there are ebbs and flows with horror. And I know, we're working at Lionsgate for a decade. You know, when you have the Saw series, which people said that, like from Saw came so many other horror movies, then there was a little bit of a lull again. But now, within the past 5 years, it's been riding an amazing wave. And it's everything that I said before. With any type of genre, right? Any type of genre, whether it's horror, drama, there are some shitty ones.
Yeah.
There always will be.
Of course.
But there have been some really exceptionally good times.
Well, do you think Blumhouse really was instrumental in kind of bringing the horror genre like to the forefront again?
I think so, and I think, to be honest with you, I think we went through a period of horror that I would consider a little bit lazy, which was the gore,
the torture porn, which I hated that phrase. Yeah,
but so it was really gory, and it was like quite. And I think then people there was a general assumption that the genre was lost its way.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, to an element, I mean, there are a number of movies that came out as part of that thing, kind of movies like The Collector, that they didn't do well, but I quite enjoyed those. Those were clever, kind of a mix between the world of Saw, the world of Hostel, you know, that kind of thing. A couple of movies like The Ruins, which I think got criminally overlooked, semi-mystical.
I liked that movie.
The Ruins was really good.
Much better book.
Yeah, well, okay, I can't read. So, no, I can't. I know all the words. So I think there was kind of it was kind of poo-pooed a little bit. And I think a lot of studios didn't kind of know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But it's movies like, you know, the ones we mentioned and movies like It that have really, I think it's given studios the confidence to tell really good stories as well as giving stuff that shocks.
Mm-hmm. And
I think people thought it was either or for a while.
Right.
And, I think that was the problem. But it's never gone away. And we've still, even in the either or situation, we've still had some great horror movies.
Yeah, and the other thing that it's done too is, to your earlier point, it has brought in mass audiences, even people who aren't professed horror fans.
Yeah.
That's what It does. That's what Pet Sematary is going to do. That's what A Quiet Place did.
Yeah.
That's what Get Out did. That's what Us did. It brings people in who, again, they don't believe that they like horror movies. But every now and then, there's that movie, like, I think Pet Sematary is going to fall into that. They see the trailer. They're going to go with their friends, their date, whatever. To Blumhouse's credit, what they have achieved is great their macro budgets, right? Yes. So even if a movie does $24 million like this, say the crap, it only costs $5 million to make.
Right.
So that's great, and people appreciate that. That's how Lionsgate operated, especially with the soft features. So, but Blumhouse then became smart. Like, that's how you got A Happy Death Day.
Mm.
Like the first one
and
such. So they were building the genre all while keeping it under $9 million.
Yeah.
So when they become more and more popular and you start to fan out that audience, and then an It can come out or a Pet Sematary.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that Stephen King guy, if he keeps at it, he's going to have a career.
He should write some books.
You, he should.
He should write some books.
Did you guys see the recent tweet from him on Mary Poppins?
Yeah.
He goes, Mary Poppins as a serial killer. I'm like, I love this man.
Talking of which, Mary Poppins Returns is out now.
Such a segue.
It's almost like I've been doing this for a million years. Mary Poppins Returns. We are going to be giving one of these away. We have one. So we're going to be giving one away. I'm not going to tell you how on the show. You need to check us out on Twitter and I'll tell you how to win it. But we have one.
We have one.
Stephen King's Disney Mary Poppins Return.
There's a machete in the umbrella.
Yeah, it's got Danny Trejo's in there.
I don't have to win it because I already have my copy.
Absolutely, which is fantastic. I hate to break it to you, but I took this off your shelf. Yes, that's fine. But talking of this, let's talk about the box office for Us this week. Box office results in the best opening for a live-action original film since Avatar. A lot of people in the chat are talking about this already. Let me run through these. Film nerd Jamie, happy for Us's success, but saying it brought back original films is nonsense. Jack Dennis, why did Scream 4 series end up perform back in 2011, and would it have done better today? We'll get back to that in a second, hopefully. Senior Nerd, I know this isn't from Scary Stories, but what was the book that had the woman with the collar, and then when her husband took it off, her head fell off? I don't know. I don't know, but I want to read that.
Not
the answer you're looking for. Film note, Jamie. Avatar and Inception exploded when they opened 6 months apart. Did Hollywood listen to that originality works thing? Nope. They said that those were fluke successes. Absolutely. Which, with Us, a lot of people, they've turned out to see it. I've actually been asking people about when they've gone to see it this week in movie theaters, what were the reactions of people? And the responses from the average Joe in movie theaters has been everything from people lapping it up to people walking out. I know a number of people have been in movie theaters where people have left before the movie's ended because they haven't enjoyed it. So I think it's going to be It's not a movie I loved. I think it's a very accomplished piece by Jordan Peele, and I'm very glad that Hollywood's made it. Very glad for this to be a big studio movie. But it's interesting to see how it has landed with audiences and how that will affect the next project, especially if he plans to make this part of a larger universe. Kit, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think he's like my new favorite horror director, I think. I mean, and you know, we're using this word horror as sort of, you know, a generalized, like we keep talking about. But there's so, like you said, there's so many different ways we can go now. And that's kind of the cool thing. And that's what Jordan Peele taps into. I mean, I literally want to sit down with this guy and say, dude, what the hell is in your head, man? Yeah. It's like, I you know, we all watch this together. I think the last 15 minutes of the movie is where it's a little problematic because you're like, you know, it's he's kind of explaining him, but you're not quite sure, and there's a lot of plot holes. But it's this slow burn, this slow brooding kind of thing that he builds in the movie that I think is what appealed to me about it. So, but I have talked to people who just didn't get it. They're just like, yeah, what?
Are you surprised by the box office? Because the box office has been very strong.
I am not.
We talked about this last week about what I kind of expected to be, and it was a bit more than I was expecting. But I'm very happy for the movie, even if I didn't particularly like it. But you're not surprised by the box office.
No, because I think he's gaining this cred now. I mean, Get Out was like this giant, huge surprise hit, and he wins these Oscars, and he's come out of the gate, and he's got the Twilight Zone thing coming on CBS, and he's great. From one movie, from Get Out, he's gained this cred. Of course, he already had the cred with the comedy thing, but I just think people wanted to see what he did next.
I'm glad you said that thing with he's gained this cred where his credibility has like super blossomed more so than his movie. People were going to see it because of him. When you think about us for a second. Outside of Lupita Nyong'o, right?
Yeah.
There really is no cast. Like, there's no star, like, you know, big cast. Mm. Even I would argue, and this is no offense, but Lupita Nyong'o on her own, like, you wouldn't say is huge bankable bucks, right? So what?
I think that's fair,
right? Jordan Peele has been able to do, much like Blumhouse does, is he mines this talent, and it's not the talent, it's the story, it's the marketing, it's Jordan Peele himself who's pulling these audiences in.
It's like with movies with Stephen King Presents.
Exactly.
Yeah, Hitchcock, Alfred and Hitchcock Presents.
I love the fact that people are, like, we're going out and the box office draw is the movie, right? And that, to me, is what's great about us. Whether you like it or you hate it, it can be divisive, but it's great conversation. Everybody talks about it.
And they're movies that, I mean, you were talking about people who don't usually like horror. My wife is a really good example of that. She's not a horror fan. She just doesn't like it. Get Out, she wasn't interested in, and then she found it was Blumhouse, and she knows the reputation of Blumhouse, so watched it, loved it. You know, she's very interested in this, so we'll probably go and see it again, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing it a second time, seeing what else I get from it. But also Pet Sematary, which comes out, which my wife knew nothing about, not a Stephen King fan. She wants to see that, or is interested in seeing it, off the back of the posters. And I think the way that these films are being marketed is half the battle with getting people on board. I really think it
so
is.
So your wife likes scary looking cats?
Check this one out. Check this one out.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
See, I get it. I get it.
Either that or hellish pussies. We're going to say,
yikes.
But yeah, so, I mean, you know, I think it's really interesting how these things have been marketed. But we're talking about audience engagement with these things and how they react. This week, on a side note, the first maze for Halloween Horror Nights at Universal was announced. It's going to be Stranger Things, which was massively popular last year. They did the first season last year. They're doing season 2 and 3 because 3 comes out in July. So they're doing that this year, which is great. But also, I would not be surprised. Now, I'm not basing this on anything that I have been told, anything that I know, or any rumors that I've heard. And I put this on Twitter this week. I would be... Blumhouse have done mazes now for a couple of years, and they've got a long-running relationship. And even though this isn't strictly a Blumhouse movie, it would be really interesting if they did what they've done with some of the other Blumhouse stuff over the last couple of years, so movies like Sinister and Happy Death Day to You and all these other things, is that what they could do is they had a Jordan Peele maze.
Yes.
And they do half is us, and half is Get Out. Or they combine the two. That, just the classic tropes from those movies.
Absolutely.
Would make a fantastic maze. Now, again, I am not basing this on anything that I know. This is purely just coming from me. I think that would be a really good idea.
Yeah.
I think
that would be wildly popular. Us would be a better fit, I think, because, you know, people can be jumping out with you with scissors and stuff. But I'm trying to think about Get Out. It's like you like a laboratory.
Yeah. When you get in.
You're like, you're in a chair and strapped to a chair and your brain's being opened up.
Like you, I have no knowledge or no rumors or anything. But if I had to guess, they're going to do also a Halloween the most recent iteration of Halloween maze. Blumhouse. I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, you are welcome to say that.
I did. Okay. Thank you.
So
I said it.
people in the chat, obviously talking about the fact that I'm going to tell you on Twitter how you can win this. Mary Poppins Returns on Blu-ray. Question here from Senior Nerd. How's your Disney money, Simon? I don't know. I've never received any. I have no idea.
He was in the wrong end of the fox deal.
But thanks. Yeah, what the fox? somebody got foxed. Jack Dennis, the ruins really got under my skin. Yeah. No.
Funny.
Zeno Hour, Mary Poppins as a serial killer would be epic. Unfortunately, the Mary Poppins fans would yell at people about Mary Poppins doesn't kill, you jerk, on Twitter for a week. Lol. Yeah, they would. Senior Nerd, Mary Poppins by Zack Snyder. Really? It's a Snyder cut! Mary Poppins. BlackRock 3160, I thought the movie was overhyped. I thought Us was decent, but was disappointed. Can't believe I saw the twist coming 10 minutes into the movie, which was something I also saw, and I'm quite surprised that more people didn't see it. But we're not going to tell you what the twist is.
Two people, actually more than two people, in my conversations said that it was spoiled in the trailer, and I rewatched the trailer because I don't remember. It's spoiled in the trailer.
Yeah. What? BlackRock 3160, I didn't think Us was scary at all. Now, I found Us uncomfortable, but I didn't find it scary.
Creepy.
Creepy. It dialed up the creep. Nacho Man, Andy Cabbage, I'm excited to see the Beach Bum this weekend. Oh, Nacho Man, we'll get to that later. Film Nerd Jamie, my only concern for Peele is not buying into the he's the new Spielberg overhype. That kind of talk is dangerous. See M. Night. See M. Night for reference. BlackRock 3160 at Film Nerd Jamie, share the same concern as you. Xeno Hour, Light Sport. Spoilers. Let me read this. Yep. I think the tethered origin should have been a little different and more supernatural, in my opinion. It's interesting, but I have a lot of questions.
Yep.
I have a lot of questions.
Same here, too.
A lot of questions. Xeno Hour saying Peele is on his way to becoming J.J. Abrams' level of producer and director. Michael Green, Simon, what up? Lots of things. Okay, moving on. I don't know what to say to that.
Would you be up for an Us sequel? This is a one-off and it was fine. I don't need to, I'd rather debate it with people and talk about it, but I don't need a sequel.
I'm very open to having, I'm actually quite excited by the fact that these films could exist within a universe and Jordan telling lots of these stories. I think that would be great. And I know he made a comment this week about the fact that he's not going to cast a lead white guy in one of his movies. And I'm like, absolutely fine. Yeah. I don't care about who the lead is. I care about the quality of the movie. I don't go and see, hey, it's a white person movie, or hey, I'm going to go and see a movie with a black guy in it. I go by movies. Okay, moving on. Lots of other stuff we need to cover off this week. Guys and Dolls remake lacing up. It's Dancing Shoes at TriStar. Here's a rumor. I've heard it's going to be Dolls and Dolls. Women taking over Hollywood. Guys and Dolls. I have not heard that. Guys and Dolls remake lacing up. It's Dancing Shoes at TriStar.
That would make Luck Be a Lady a totally different song.
Absolutely, yes, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be. That ain't no Sheila. that would be good, actually. That could be Guys and Dolls, The Crying Game Years. But seriously, I mean, there's quite a few of these classic musicals being remade these days.
West Side Story,
Guys and Dolls.
Why are they doing that? I'm sorry, Stephen. I don't agree with that one anyway.
But also then we've got a lot of musicals, again, continuing to be turned into movie.
Right.
Cats.
Yeah.
And the spin-off, Litter Tray. I love Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
It's a great, great movie. I don't...
I was in it in high school.
The movie?
I was one of the Runyon players. I wasn't an actual, one of the main characters. I did try out for Adelaide, though, and I had a good audition. I sang that, the Adelaide's Lament song, pretty good. It.
Who was that bitch that stole it from you?
Yeah, it's true. Coming after you still.
That's a great horror movie, by the way. just going to say, just putting that out there. So, I mean, I'm kind of indifferent towards this. I think it's interesting. You know, I'm intrigued by it, but...
I think it's one of those musicals that, unless you are a huge fan of TCM, and who isn't who watches us, right? Yeah. Guys and Dolls sort of kind of falls on the wayside, you know, beneath a West Side Story, a Music Man, South Pacific kind of thing. But how do you remake that chemistry?
Yeah.
I mean, again, that was a time where that Rat Pack people, like...
Although I don't think Marlon Brando really fit into that movie all that well, but he did his best.
He did. You're right. But how do you replicate that?
Yeah.
I don't think you replicate it.
I don't think you try to replicate it. I think what you do is look for something new, which could turn out to be great, or it could turn out to be Grease 2, which is great in some ways, but also a horrible movie. So we'll see what happens with that. A lot of people in this talking about it. Any box office predictions for the Beach Bum this weekend? Okay, Nacho Man, we'll talk about Beach Bum later.
But wait a second.
We'll be the only people
actually,
talking about Beach Bum.
Somebody brought up Cop Rock.
Which I was just going to get to. Film Nerd Jamie. Still no Cop Rock remake. I loved Cop Rock.
That's okay.
That was so bad. I genuinely loved that show. But there were lots of movies, sort of TV shows around that time that I would really love to see remade. Mm-hmm. But that's something for another show. Nacho Man, Andy Cabbage, I would love to see Cruising the Musical. So would I.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Would be awesome.
Cruising on a Sunday afternoon.
No, not the same one. A lot more penis in this one. Michael Green, any movie that has come out this year that has disappointed you guys already? Yeah, that is something we can get to on another show. But yes, there have been. Serious question. What are the chances that we're getting a Singing in the Rain remake?
Oh,
I mean, there is nothing in the water right now to say that is in the works. It would not surprise me, but I just hope that they don't try to do that.
Yeah, because they really can't.
We're going to move on from this in a second.
Okay. But again, like, if you can do a West Side Story, I say anything's open game. Whether we like it or not, anything could be fair game.
I'm just waiting for the Book of Mormon and Wicked movies.
Well, Wicked Wicked obviously is on the way. Book of Mormon, I know, is being worked on, so we'll see. I would like to see Avenue Q, the movie. I loved Avenue Q. I thought that was great. That's cool. So just me then. Okay, other big news this week. The Eternals hopes to draft Angelina Jolie into the MCU. Angelina Jolie, previously associated with animated movies and stuff, especially the likes of DreamWorks, which is now part of the Universal company as well, under that banner. But obviously, MCU would be something very different for Angelina Jolie. We have seen a lot of actors with a lot of kudos moving over, starring in the MCU. You know, the likes of Annette Bening, Robert Redford, many people. We've seen the likes of Nicole Kidman going to DC, so this does not surprise me. Also, Angelina Jolie was at the Dumbo premiere in LA quite recently, so clearly she is forming a relationship. You don't just turn up on a Disney red carpet like that.
Yeah. No, but so, Maleficent 2 is coming
Maleficent
out
2,
later
I was gonna
this year,
say.
Right?
Yeah, and Maleficent, she's already done one movie with Disney. Right. So we could see this relationship with the mouse.
Absolutely.
Getting a little bit firmer. Your thoughts on Angelina Jolie appearing in this? I know very little about the Eternals.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either. I kind of read up on it. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, look. Michelle Pfeiffer, too. I forgot to bring her in.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, look, she's not really been doing a whole lot of movies of late, Angelina. Right. So, you know, maybe she's seeing how all these movies are doing. She's like, I want to get in on that. And I think she'd be great. I mean, she really can do anything. I've always liked her as an actress, so I think she'd be awesome.
She is a very solid actress. This is, again, for her and the career, I think it's great to get her back out again. Mm. And like to your point, there's this renaissance that's been happening with actresses like Annette Bening and Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's so great to see them on screen again, and you hope that it gives them other opportunity.
And what fun, though, right, to be in a superhero movie? I'm sorry. I think it would be a lot of fun.
And for Angelina Jolie, number one, I loved Maleficent.
Yeah.
Why? Mostly because of her.
Yeah.
She sold the character. She was so good. So, yeah, it's good for her.
I'd be really interested, and I'd be interested to see what kind of role they give her. I mean, I'm assuming they would be something that would be quite ethereal or something perhaps, you know, as a baddie. I mean, I have no idea what they would cast her as, but, you know, I think she'd certainly add an element of gravitas to that.
Absolutely.
And I think it's great. And I think especially as we're moving into the next phase of the MCU, I think we really need a number of really strong people that we've had in this phase and the phase before to really carry it through and keep it, you know, to really give it that extra bit of talent weight. Zeno Hour. So Brad Pitt gets cast in a DC movie now? That's cruel, Zeno Hour.
But funny.
That's good luck.
BlackRock 316. I'm surprised about the reactions to Jolie joining the MCU was very meh. Yeah, because I think, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think if you have someone who is very much in the middle, you know, is not like, oh my God, it's amazing, or oh my God, that's awful, it's actually easier to work with them because you're not working against a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or your anticipation is too high.
Yeah, it gives you that level of fluidity, which I think is really going to be good. Are we thinking Jolie would be a lead or supporting? I think I don't know. I mean, it really depends whether they want to. If she's doing a villain, villains tend to be, aside from Thanos.
No.
Thanos.
Thanos.
Then we need to, you know, that he's really come to the fore. But generally, the villains are not the ones that are out the front when you think about MCU. So it will be very interesting to see. Okay. I also want to talk about something that I wrote up on Forbes this week before we move on to the rest of the film news and obviously the reviews for the films this week. We've got 20 minutes left on the show. I went to see something in LA on Sunday night. Big fan of 80s movies. John Hughes, as I say in this piece, is one of the reasons that I got into this industry. And there's a production company called For the Record. They do all sorts of film-based things. They did a Love Actually thing in LA before the holidays, and their next project, their current project, is a thing called For the Record, the Brat Pack. And what they've done, I'll be honest with you, when I got the release, I thought it sounded awful. I thought it sounded horrible. And I genuinely, like, immersive musical experiences can either be really good or they can be absolutely terrible. And because I love 80s movies so much, I was like, oh, this could go probably a lot of ways. Not many of them are good. Seriously, it is one of the best things I have experienced when it comes to interpretations of movies, sort of live recreations or you know, sort of, you know, reimagining of stuff. What they've done is basically a lot of these 80s movies, so everything from some of the John Hughes classics through to stuff like Say Anything and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, they've taken classic dialogue from all of the movies, built a new story. And they've got an amazing cast of people who sing classic tracks from these 80s movie soundtracks. And they've created this new movie, this new story, with these classic characters that we basically saw in The Breakfast Club.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And they enact it in a bar in the Line Hotel. It's an 80s-themed bar called The Break Room. Break Room 86 in the Line Hotel in Koreatown in LA. And it's a really intimate space, which, again, if it was awful, could have been really terrible because you're right there in it. It was 90 minutes long. Oh, my God. I was in absolute heaven when I watched this show.
If I can ask, like, is it a movie or is this like
it's think of like a jukebox musical of classic moments from 80s movies intertwined with them performing classic songs from the soundtracks of these movies.
Wow. Okay.
I was so impressed with
how long
what
is
they
it
did.
Running
well, it's running until June.
Oh, great.
And they're doing it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. And all the information is on this piece that I've written, this review that I've written for Forbes. It's called Review for the Record, The Brat Pack is Essential Experience for 80s Movie Fans. Seriously, I was so, so impressed with this. Now, it isn't cheap, but it is worth the ticket price. Tickets are $86.
Okay.
And there's loads of other stuff that goes around it. You can go in there an hour early and you can go and do karaoke, and the whole decor of the bar is amazing. You get food, you get a little lunchbox. All of this stuff is in the article. Just a little like lunch pail, which is awesome. And if you want to do standing room tickets, those are seated tickets. You know, there are some available for like $19.86. You know, it's 90 minutes long, so you're going to be standing up for 90 minutes. Seriously, for the record, the Brat Pack blew me away last week. If you're in LA or coming to LA and you get a chance to do it, seriously, you will not regret it. I just wanted to mention that this week. Full review is up on Forbes. Okay, let's move on to some other stuff. Pet Sematary coming out very, very soon. We're going to go and see it. Who's seen it already?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
We're going to go and see it next week.
Yep.
Pet Sematary prequel, a possibility, according to the producer of this new movie, Lorenzo de Bonaventura. And just to plug again, Forbes, I've actually did an interview with the director of the original Pet Sematary.
Mary Lambert.
And that is going to be going up on Forbes early next week.
It's fantastic. I was just reading an article about Stephen King and his association and what he feels about the original Pet Sematary. I'm looking forward to the new movie. I'm gonna be honest, I just tweeted something out about this. I've read the book Pet Sematary in the movie as well when it came out at theaters. Mary Lambert, again, a woman in horror. But I just recently rewatched it because there was like a special edition that came out not too long ago. And it's a very dark movie. I had a hard time sitting through it. It really goes dark within the themes of loss and remorse and dealing with that and dealing with loss. It's really dark. And it wasn't so much scared as I was disturbed. And again, really solid cast, and Mary Lambert did an amazing job.
Yeah, she did, not with her
cast, but Fred Gwynne.
Yeah.
This is what I'm gonna miss, because John Lithgow is that character here, and he doesn't have that main accent.
There he goes.
That Fred Gwynne.
I know, you're right.
You know, he was so good in that movie, and I forget the actor's name who played the dad. But he was like
Dale Midif.
Yeah, he was fantastic. The kid that played Gage, Denise Crosby from Star Trek: The Next Generation, was fantastic. So I'm looking forward to this. I just don't know how I'm going to fare.
Yeah, I didn't love the original all that much because I did love the book.
I really liked it. I revisited it for this interview because it's come out on Blu-ray and it's beautifully touched up. And Mary was actually involved in the recreation of this and sat with the guys at Paramount, went back to the original stuff, was like, do you want to do this? This will all be an interview on Forbes.
Do you write for Forbes?
I do. I haven't mentioned that. One of my many outlets. I actually went back and I liked it more now. And it seriously,
really?
When they've touched it up, it's beautiful. It really is like, chef's kiss. With the new Pet Sematary, which I'm really looking forward to, obviously with the Pet Sematary movie we have already, we had a sequel which was not as good. Mary originally wanted to take the surviving character and carry through. That didn't happen. They did all new characters. But I think a Pet Sematary prequel is a possibility for this new one. If it lands well at the box office, and so far reviews have been pretty good.
They have been.
And solid and not sensationalist, I think, which is good and refreshing. I'd be open to that. What do you think,
guys? I think so, because, I mean, they build the story. They build this background to the cemetery, right?
Yeah.
And so we already know that it's been used. And so to what extent had it been used before? So I would like to
I just
that.
Say sometimes dead is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one little thing I want to say. I was surprised when I watched the trailer for Pet Sematary that they revealed the twist.
Yeah.
I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Why would they do that when, you know, and I guess they did it. I heard that they did it because they just didn't want people to freak out about it, that they switched the kids, you know,
We'll see. Honest with you, I saw the first trailer. It was so long ago. I was like, I'm in. I just haven't watched anything else. So I'm trying to go into this as fresh as humanly possible.
I'm glad, though, that this piece with Mary Lambert, that you revisited the original, because I, too, found it. I remember seeing it at the theaters and just looking at it as a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But watching it again sort of kind of with a different perspective, the movie, in a sense, is a little bit ahead of its time. And when you look at it today, or at least for me, it is a completely different movie than the movie that I saw back at a WBCN screening, radio station screening. It's a different movie. Mary Lambert did a really, I think she did a fantastic job in delivering the scares. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
And I've got, talking about Stephen King, I've got a really nice story that she, an anecdote she gave me about her and Stephen during the making of the movie, which is, I think people actually enjoy reading.
Nice.
I will read it.
That's good. A tease.
I will read it. Where can you read it?
On forums.
Bill and Ted Face the Music, bringing back William Sadler as Death. Great.
Of course.
Great.
What's he doing?
Great. Yeah, I mean, but great. I mean, I think it's great. They should bring back some people from other people from the movie as well. I think that'd be really, really good. Other good story before I get to the box office and the week's reviews: The Dead Don't Die. Jim Jarmusch's zombie movie announcing an impressive cast. Check this out. It should be out this summer. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Chloe Savini, Steve Buscemi, Danny Glover, Caleb Landry-Jones, Rosie Perez, Iggy Pop, Selena Gomez, Carol Kane, and Tom Waits.
Awesome.
Get me there.
Yeah.
They're not so much about the plot of the story, but I'm you got zombie.
I don't care what it's about.
It's the first Jim Jarmusch movie that I've wanted to see.
You got Jim Jarmusch zombie and you got Bill Murray. I mean, come on.
People in the chat talking about a lot of the stuff that we've covered in the show today kind of think Pet Sematary will get lost in the shuffle between us, Shazam, and Endgame coming. Maybe. Film nerd Jamie, maybe, hoping not, as people tend to. I think us actually coming out a couple of weeks before will mean that people are kind of on a little bit of a horror tip right now and they're waiting for Endgame and there's nothing kind of in that. I don't think there's going to be a massive intersect between the Dumbo crowd and the Pet Sematary crowd.
No, I don't think so.
Elephant Cemetery, crossover, I don't know. Yeah. Tim Burton, I could see that. Stop motion animation.
Okay, bearing Dumbo in the Pet Cemetery. Okay. Now that's a movie I want to see.
That would be great. Zombie elephants, anybody? Animation Dude says, will the general public be too horrid out post us? The Pet Sematary box office will suffer. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I mean, I don't expect Pet Sematary to do us numbers,
no.
But I think there's a lot of people who are genuinely looking forward to this movie.
And with the word of mouth that it's been getting, I think it's going to do pretty well. This is all going to lead us into It.
Yeah.
You know, which will do phenomenal too. So it the second chapter. Yeah.
It happens. Okay, let's talk about this week's big releases and, well, let's talk about this week's big release in The Beach Bum. Okay, so let's talk about The Beach Bum first of all. Who's seen this movie?
You have.
Just me. I got to be honest with you, I didn't love this movie. I'm a fan of the director's work, whether it's written or him behind the camera. It just didn't work for me. It was just too rambling. I don't think these are the best characters. I think it was quite poorly written. The characters weren't kind of engaging. It felt like a workshopping exercise rather than anything else. And some of the characters were really outrageous and some of the characters were kind of subdued and it just didn't kind of, it felt like everyone was kind of doing their own thing, but they're all doing it together.
How is Matthew McConaughey?
I mean, he's fine. He's playing a stoner, you know?
Right. Not a big stretch.
Not a big stretch. I just felt it was a variation on a theme for him. I'd seen things. And this film is obviously also being sold on, you know, Snoop Dogg has a bigger part than I was expecting. Jimmy Buffett!
Really?
One of my musical heroes, who I finally got to meet last night, which is amazing. He's in it a lot. He and Snoop Dogg are actually great. I'd love to see like a Cheech and Chong road movie with Jimmy Buffett and Snoop Dogg. Matthew's in it. Zac Efron's in it for like less than 10 minutes. Jonah Hill is in it sporadically. It's Martin Lawrence is in it as a guy who runs a dolphin boat called Captain Whack. I mean, it's kind of fine and it's like a journey, but when you get to the destination,
right?
You kind of...
Yeah. Is it trying to be like The Big Lebowski? Is it?
Well, I mean, there's elements of that, and there's like elements of previous movies like Kids and Spring Breakers and stuff like that. But it's too ambling to really be anything really cohesive. It was a disappointment, you know? I like some things sometimes that are really different. There's sorbets to clear the palate, but I don't know. I mean, it's getting quite a wide release for this kind of movie and for this director, and then it's going to be on Hulu for August. Really? I would say wait for Hulu. I don't think this is a movie you need to see in the movie theaters. And from my experience, if you go and see it, I think a lot of people are going to be fucking about in the screening, and that's just going to annoy you, because they're not going to be focused on the movie. Let's also talk about Dumbo. We've got 9 minutes left on the show, so I want to talk about this. Dumbo posted 2.6 million in Thursday night previews last night, which is not too bad. If you compare that to Cinderella, that was 2.3 million. 3 million for How to Train Your Dragon. So it's doing okay. Christopher Robin and Through the Looking Glass were like 1.5. You know, which is, you know, so this is considerably more than that. Mixed reviews for Dumbo. We're looking at a weekend. It's looking at coming out on the top of the box office. Just going to check my stats here. 52 million, which is, you know, pretty decent. And then us will probably be down to number two. There appear to be a lot of people very excited about this movie. So I think we'll see. The marketing has been quite interesting and I haven't felt the buzz, but I think because of the heritage that comes with Dumbo, like things like Mary Poppins Returns, which you can, I'll tell you how you can win that later on. it is, if you follow us on Twitter at MoviePress, you'll find out exactly how to do that. I think audiences will turn out for this.
I think it's a good family movie. I really think. And you know, right now now that How to Train Your Dragon has you know gone down the scale there, I think this is another one to bring your family to. It is so sweet. Very poignant. And yes, I loved the original. It was only 63 minutes long. And so they had to flesh it out. But this just melds, you know, Tim Burton sensibilities with the circus and then the Disney magic. And all of the, I just loved how they incorporated all the original iconic moments from the short, you know, the 1941 film. I loved how they did all that.
It seeps of Disney nostalgia, whether you're an animated Dumbo fan or a Disney Parks fan.
Yeah.
I found this to be, I really enjoyed this movie. I found it to be very good for young, old families alike. I think it's one of Burton's most, one of his more beautiful looking films.
Yeah.
You know, the circus quality. Listen, he would have been, had he been, he's like Todd Browning. Like, he appreciates these freaks. Like, he would have made Freaks back then. And He loves this, that cast, so to speak. I think it's the best Disney Burton collaboration.
Yeah,
I think they him do what they. I think they just let him be.
Yeah.
And
he's mellowed, I think, as well, Tim Burton.
Yeah.
For sure.
He's always had a heart. You look at movies like Edward Scissorhands.
I mean, and this is felt. Someone tweeted me this week and was like, you know, how Tim Burton is this? Because I'm not a big Tim Burton fan. I think this is a mellowed Tim Burton. It still has a lot of his trademarks and his design and his eye. You can tell it's a Tim Burton infused movie.
Yes.
But it's not kooky. It's not jagged. It doesn't have some of those edges that some of the Tim Burton movies that we've known for a long time have really had. I loved a lot of the characters in this. Seriously, I think the performance was great. Colin Farrell was great. Ava Green was great. I loved Michael Keaton. Danny DeVito is just amazing. I thought the Dumbo was great. The guy in mocap is actually a guy from Wales, I found out this week. Really great way of bringing Dumbo to life. Entirely believable. Obviously, it's not real, but entirely believable. And there are some sequences in this movie, like towards the end of the movie, when there's, you know, a collapse, and when there's with the March of the Elephants. Just stunning visuals.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie really moved me. I know a lot of people saying they're in tears, and you were on a screening last night, and there was a lady who was sobbing away.
Yeah.
It didn't move me to tears, but it did really touch me. I thought it was very enchanting, is a word.
It touched my heart in a really good way.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice now. And I left the second time feeling as good, if not a little better, because I watched all these nuances and what Tim Burton brought to the table. And, you know, even, you're right, it doesn't have necessarily that edge, but the tropes.
It's more nuanced.
Yeah.
It's more nuanced.
And he really, all his movies look great. He always has great cinematographers, but this one had this, like, John Ford Western landscape because of where the circus is. And thematically,
richness and scale, yeah, and depth and
the red
warmth,
clouds, the, yeah, warmth, which
sometimes lacks.
Yeah,
in a Tim Burton film,
it can be very clinical and linear.
Absolutely.
And like,
yeah.
And he didn't have a Johnny Depp kind of character. You know, I mean, he didn't have to have that sort of over the top character that Johnny Depp loves to play.
The closest to that was,
would be Michael Keaton.
Would be, well, I would have said Danny DeVito.
Yeah, that's true.
Kind
that's
of,
but, and then it's kind of, it switches to Keaton when DeVito is slightly more of a beaten down character.
And, and let's be honest too, it's great to see Batman and Penguin together again. You know, and Burton always works great with his muses, and he had an amazing cast of muses, from Ava Green to Danny DeVito to Michael Keaton.
And now he includes Colin Farrell in that now too, he said on the press
conference.
Did
he really?
Yeah, because he says Colin definitely fit in, right?
I hope so, because I like the sympathetic Colin Farrell, and he can play a good dad. He can play a good broken man. There wasn't much in this movie that I didn't like.
No, I really enjoyed it. Animation dude in the chat saying, should Dumbo have been shelved until it could be released on Disney Plus? It feels on the level of Pete's Dragon of Disney live action remakes that has almost no wide anticipation. And I think, I don't think that is, that point is correct, but I think it's not entirely incorrect, and here's why. I think this has more anticipation, but I think the eyes of the people who are going to see Disney live action movies this year have been very firmly fixed on Aladdin and the Lion King. Aladdin and the Lion King are the ones that Disney have really been crowing about and really pushing, and that's been the marketing and the big trailer releases. That's where they, I think, they're putting their money this year. I don't think that means they don't have as much faith, or there isn't the anticipation for Dumbo. I don't think this will be in the top echelons of the live-action earners, and I think anticipation is slightly mooted, but for the points that I've made.
Yeah.
I don't think it's because people aren't interested in Dumbo, and I think this is one of those movies where it will have its audience, it'll find its feet, and I think people will discover it, like Pete's Dragon is another example, which I actually really liked. But again, you know, there wasn't, you know, Animation Dude is right. There wasn't the anticipation for that. It came out, it didn't do phenomenally well. And it was something of a disappointment, but we'll see. So,
well, you know, Dumbo, I think, is a little more classic than Pete's Dragon was.
I agree. I mean, Pete's Dragon was a movie that I remember watching as a kid, going to the movie theater, and I didn't enjoy it. I think, I didn't enjoy it.
Latter half of their animated, you know, slate. So it wasn't as, it was more cheesy looking.
So I think Dumbo is slightly different, but we'll see.
Would you agree about this? Because you mentioned marketing, right? Well, and I want to throw this out. I felt that the marketing for Dumbo delivered. Like, the trailers delivered to me what I got in the theater, and they didn't give away too much. Mm-hmm. Like, in the trailers, we never really fully see Dumbo fly and how the mechanics of that work. And the heart of the trailer, to me, came onto the big screen.
Yeah, we need to wrap the show up. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. But no, I think there's an element of that. But I think also, I think what will really work in its favor is the fact that there hasn't been as huge a marketing push. There have been a couple of trailers, but not too many trailers. We haven't seen teasers. We've seen a trailer and a trailer. And I think by word of mouth, I think this is where this is actually going to find its audience, by people experiencing it without the hullabaloo! and all the, you know, the rings and the circus and the, you know, the blah, blah, blah. And I think this mooted approach, actually, I think will draw the audience in more than having it shoved in their face when they're having two other things, like the meat and two veg of Disney shoved in your face. Jack Dennis saying Tim Burton lost his creativity once CGI technology advanced. And on that, Jack, I think actually this, even though there's a lot of CGI in it, I think this is where he's really clawed some of that creativity back.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I think actually it's something he's used really to his favor this time.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to wrap up the show. Dimitri, who are you? Where can we find you, please?
Right here, Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press, and also Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie, where today we will be dissecting and breaking down Us. Also, you can please support me on the Twitters, at DMovies1701. Thank you for all of the yous who do support, and I'll follow back. We've had great conversation with people. It's really awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Who are you? Where can we find you?
An editor for Screen Picks, so you can check out my website. And then also, I'm on the Twitters as well, at The Movie Kit.
And you can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. I just call it Twitter. and obviously, I have a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson. You can check out my work on everywhere from Reuters to Forbes to E and many, many, many other places.
Forbes, right?
Forbes, right? Did I mention Forbes?
What's happening with that again?
We have Mary Poppins Returns to give away this week. I have one copy of this. I will tell you on Twitter exactly how you can win this. I require you to do some work.
It's my copy.
I request. Sure, it's not. Well, it's not now. So thank you very much for watching the show this week. You have a lovely WonderCon. You're going to WonderCon? And CinemaCon?
I'm going to WonderCon, CinemaCon, Star Wars Con. So it's all con. So if you happen to be at WonderCon, you see me, say hello. If you happen to be at CinemaCon, if you're a distributor and exhibitor, happen to see me, say hello. And if you are making the trek to Chicago for the Star Wars celebration, you happen to see me there, say hello. That's
anyway,
where I will be.
Dimitri's basically saying he won't be on the show for a little while.
Lucky everybody.
And if you see me walking around Vancouver this weekend, say hello. Hey. I'm there on a Synchronous Tap visit, which
really?
I can't tell you all about. Really?
Or you could just see me on the street and say hi.
Hey, lady! Thank you so much for watching the show. This is Meet the Movie Press. It is March the 29th. My name is Simon Thompson. We really appreciate you being part of the show. Spread the word if you like what we do. If you don't, keep it quiet. Don't tell anybody. Like us, subscribe, leave reviews. You can catch us on everywhere from YouTube and iTunes and Spotify and Podcast One and Anchor and anyone that will have us. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week. Have a good one. Go and see Dumbo!
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.